So thank you all for your patience. Welcome to the Emergency Financial and Case Management Services Affinity Group. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And I am so thankful that I get to work with these wonderful co-chairs of yours. We have Rebecca Konefsky, who works at Shoki JFS, which is Lower Fairfield County in Connecticut, and Jen Glazer, who put her JFS LA in the title. Thank you both. If everyone also can just put their communities, I always like to know that, and then we can get to know each other even more.
Hello, Angela.
I am going to, and how you do that is you right click on your name and then you go down four and rename yourself and press OK. So we've got a guest speaker here who's going to talk with us for the first part of this financial services group, this emergency financial services group. And Rebecca is going to introduce her.
Okay. Hi, guys. It's Rebecca. From obviously you guys know me. So I just wanted to share with, I wanted to introduce our speaker today. Thank you very, very much, Michael, for taking the time to join us. This is Michael Victor. He's the Assistant Vice President and Branch Manager, Insurance Manager of a bank here in Stamford, in Connecticut called First County Bank. And I met Michael because he was already doing presentations actually for our agency through our employment and training division. And then I received a grant for financial education, at which point First County, I reached out to the foundation through the grant and said, I'd like to do workshops. Can you help me with one of your staff members? And they referred Michael back to us. So Michael came back, and then what we did together was incredible. Michael provided our clients with wonderful presentations on financial education, hot topics in today's world. And the clients are asking for more, and it generated a great buzz. I said to Lisa and Jen, hey, I think this is something worth discussing with the group, because financial education, let's face it, is really something we need to be doing with our clients more and more as this pandemic doesn't appear to be going away. And more, we might find people are really going to be struggling this winter more than ever. So with that introduction, Michael, I want to hand the floor to you so you can share with our group what we've done. Thank you.
Thanks, Rebecca. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks guys for having me. Let me give you just a brief kind of history of what we've done here at First County. Back in, my memory's failing me now, so don't hold me to be exact, but it was probably about 2007 when the senior management decided they wanted to get involved and provide financial literacy to our local community. The First County Bank Foundation does a lot of community work, and they thought this would be a nice piggyback for it. And because in a previous life I had done some public speaking, they asked me if I would head this up. So I've been doing this now, running our program for about 13 years. I've done hundreds of presentations for agencies like yourselves, local high schools, local community college, all focused around financial literacy. What's been really interesting for me, and where I think I can provide some value to you folks, is just giving you kind of an idea of what those programs look like, what the real major benefit I have found for people that I've met with from all ages and all economic backgrounds, and how you might be able to approach some of your local financial service organizations to be able to try to take advantage of this where you guys are located. So we typically, what I've done is I've used as a resource the FDIC's Money Smart program. And in a couple of seconds, we can, Lisa's gonna share the website with you so we can go through it. But before we go there, let me just kind of tell you my take on this. you can go in and you can Google financial literacy and probably get hundreds of references, and they don't necessarily need to be from the FDIC. There's plenty of information out there. And the information can go from the most elementary, basic discussion to really, really diverse and difficult topics. What I've found in this arena is that it is not as much the material that's important as the people that you can partner with to provide that information. Because quite frankly, and you'll see when we go to the website, you'll be able to go, I'll show you the links where you can all take a look at this for yourselves. You know, Rebecca and I have done this a couple of times now. It's really elementary basic stuff. But like anything else, when you specialize in something, what is elementary and basic to you, me, is not necessarily elementary and basic to other people. And so having a professional who's in the field, who deals with people all the time to bounce questions off and to talk about real world situations, to me, is what I've found to be the most valuable. More times than I can count, I've had situations where I've done these local presentations, and especially at the high school level, and the high school kids that I've done these presentations for show up at my branch with their parents to introduce me to their parents and open accounts and tell me, this is the guy who came to my school and talked to us about bank accounts. That's why I wanted to come here to open up my accounts. And he told me to bring my parents with me so that, you know, we can get a plan together and start figuring out what's the best way for me to approach my finances. So the byplay, the individual byplay, I think is so, so important. You know, and as we go through this, my suggestion to you is to use your connections. And the first place I would start is the branches where you bank and the relationships that you've made. Go to your local bankers, the people that you know, and talk to them about getting involved with financial literacy. I will say to you that most banks these days, if they don't have someone doing this or a department doing it, and it'll really depend on the size of the bank to determine how they have it set up. But most banks, this is on their radar. Because more and more to differentiate themselves, financial institutions are starting to pay attention to this and provide it to their communities because it does set them apart from their competitors. In addition to that, there's a selfish aspect to this as well. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the CRA for banks, Community Reinvestment Act, but it is a requirement for banks to participate in activities that help their CRA ratings. Banks are rated on this by the FDIC. So activities like this, financial literacy presentations to local community agencies and schools, provide credit to the banks that they benefit from. So there, you will find, I think, if you go out and try to solicit this from your local banker, you will find that they're positive and interested in this because it benefits them as well on a direct basis, not only the indirect benefit of helping the community. So, you know, I would start with people you know and begin, and you'll be surprised. So when I first started this, I met a couple of folks from some of the larger banks, where Citibank, for example, they had a whole department that was set up to do this, you know, versus a smaller bank like ours, where it was really kind of me that was running it with the support of our senior management team. And I would go out and recruit volunteers just from the staff and get people who were interested in doing this. And, you know, it was kind of a grassroots operation because of my public speaking experience, I was training folks to do this. Because again, the curriculum is relatively simple, but it's really about being able to look people in the eye and help them with real world problems, and being able to take that curriculum and communicate it through the day-to-day interactions that we have with customers, that really helps people to understand it and to feel like they have somebody local. So that would be.
Should I share the screen?
So that's kind of the approach really that you want to take. And Lisa, yes, that would be a good idea. Let's take a quick look at the FDIC website so you can see what kind of options are available to you there.
Okay. I don't know why it's not, hold on, I'll get it.
So, yeah, FDIC.gov.
There you go, do you see it?
Okay, yep, so there's the website, right? And it can be a little bit daunting to find it. So what I'm gonna do is, rather than go that way, Lisa, just go right up to the search box on the upper right there and just type in money space smart. That's the name of the FDIC's pro, and search that. And you'll see a whole bunch of options come up, right? So if you scroll down there, you can see there's a whole bunch of different education programs they make available. And these programs are free. So all you have to do is request them, and you can download them, or they'll send you CDs that you can use. So I've shared ours with Rebecca. That's what she uses for our presentations.
What do you use, Rebecca?
The adult. She uses the adult education. So there's adult, there's Money Smart for adults, yep. And there's all kinds
of Money Smart for adults is what we use.
So you may not be able to actually pull up here the actual presentations, but as you stop right there, because as you can see, if you look on the one that Lisa just clicked on under that first module there, your money values and influences, so look under documents and you see that you've got four basic things there. So there's an instructor guide, which gives notes on how you can present it. There's a participant guide, which gives you the actual information, which I always leave behind with people, because what I tend, and there's PowerPoint slides. So typically
what I'm doing. Do you have to buy this, or how does it?
No,
the instructor guide.
This is all available on the program. So when you contact them and tell them you'd like to get their curriculum, all you need to do is ask for it and they will give it to you. And it all comes with this. So my point to this is, you can use those PowerPoint slides along with the instructor guide, and you don't have to be somebody who works at a bank to present this to people. The real value in having a banker involved with you is you've got some real life stories and some real life examples that can really enhance the presentation, because the information is the information.
Yeah.
Checking accounts are checking accounts. Savings accounts are savings accounts. And they're the same at most banks. It's really that individual back and forth that you get from the banker that will help you. Now, if you flip back.
Hold on for a second, Michael. I just clicked on contacts and it says, go to the community affairs. But over here, you could do specific community affairs in different areas.
Right. And if you go back, there's one thing I want to show you. Go back to the main screen, because I looked at this a little bit earlier. This might even be more helpful. So click one more time. There you go. Now, if you scroll down and there's going to be.
Contact us?
No. There was a spot that I saw. Hang on one second, because I've got it.
Down here?
I've got it on my screen. Nope. Give me one sec, and I'll tell you exactly what it was. There's actually a resource where you can go and you can pull. There we go. So let me get to. I'm going to get right back. Okay. So. There is a Money Smart Alliance. Do you see that one?
Does anyone see it?
Nope. Go to the, I think you're on the second, are you on the first or the second page? Down on the bottom where you can see up where you, the results page down on the bottom. So you're on, I think it's on one, there it is right there. I see it. So go back up, see the Money Smart Alliance.
Oh, here.
Yep. There you go. Click on that one. So my bank is a member of the Money Smart Alliance. You can scroll down a little bit further and write down list of Money Smart Alliance members. Go down, right? And there's a, yep, right there. And there's a link. So this is going to give you a list, and you can, I guess you can write, you can click up on the top in the blue there to kind of roll this. So go to region, right up on to the right, right in the middle there. There's a one that says region. There you go. Click on that, and it'll order it by region alphabetically.
Wow. This is terrific. I wish I was in the field now to really, right? You can get some great resources here.
Right. So it can make you, it can put you in touch with people who are doing this. And some of these are organizations and some of these are banks. And the folks at FDIC, you know, and if you do go to the contact us, there's a lot of resources here where they can put you in touch with local bankers who are doing these presentations. So there's a lot of, you know, resource that you can go through here to make some local connections off of this part of their website. And again, what I would suggest that you do is ask for the curriculum and download it yourselves into your organizations. You don't need to be a bank to have it. And then you can kind of look through it and see which of the things make sense for you. Like there's programs available for elementary schools. You know, those of you who might be involved with programs there's a lot that can be had there. So that you can get a feel for how this all works, and you can then reach out to your local banks and institutions and try to bring them in to help you do this.
Terrific.
So, you know, this is the basis of it. And again, like I said, I think you can go and you can probably Google a lot of sources with a lot of different opportunities, but I like this program because it's simple, it's free, it's easy to get, and it engages you in the conversation. I will tell you that the best value that any of the folks that have ever done this with me, whether it's now that I'm doing it remotely or pre-COVID, when I was going out and doing two or three of these presentations a week at local organizations and schools, it's about the connection that you make with people. And the fact that they get this feeling, what I typically would do is set up maybe a 4 or 5 module program with the local organizations. And what happens is they would make their programs. So programs like Rebecca talked about, that she got a grant to run this program. So your people, you know, what you do is you require them to be part of these presentations in order to get the benefits of the program. So they're kind of stuck to be in it. And if you run like a 5 or 6 week swing, what you'll find happening is the first presentation or two, they come because they have to. And then when they get to 3, 4, 5, and 6, they come because you've made a connection with them. And they really, really enjoy being there. I know, Rebecca, back when I used to do these with Eileen from Jewish Financial Service there in Stamford, we would have 35 people show up.
So Michael, I'm going to just interrupt for one sec. This is Jen. Can you give us a sense, as we're looking at this, what the program itself, like, what do you go out and speak to bigger groups? What does that look like?
Yeah. You know? So most of what I've done, there's two programs that I've used, Money Smart for adults and Money Smart for young adults. Mm-hmm. The young adults I use at the high school level. The adults I would use at agencies like yours and or the community college level. There's not a heck of a lot different between the programs, other than when you look at them, the young adult program's a little bit more juvenile. They kind of have some cartoon stuff in there. And the kids get a kick out of the fact that I kind of say to them that I'm going to stay away from that stuff. And what I really want to do is talk to them about the real world banking. What I found really, really interesting for my own personal benefit is that many times the high school kids are better prepared than some of the adults that I deal with at the agency. Because a lot of the folks that I deal with at the agencies, their financial ability is really strapped. You know, these are folks who are struggling, who part of the reason they struggle is circumstance. Part of the reason they struggle is no one's ever really taught them the basics of finances. Whereas the high school kids might actually get some of that in high school. And typically that when you deal with the high schools, you're dealing with the more advanced groups. So I've done a couple of local high schools here. I've done presentations for 50 or 60 kids at once. Generally, when I do the adult organizations, I do it with 15 to 20 people because I like to have the back and forth. I like to focus not so much on the curriculum as I do on having people ask me questions that the curriculum generates and then doing real world conversations with them. Are we still on here? Because it looks like Jen's frozen on me. I don't know if I'm frozen or Jen's frozen.
No, we're all here.
Okay.
So does anyone have any other questions for Michael? Any thoughts? I thought it was interesting. I really like all those resources. I hope that some of our agencies will be able to benefit from them.
And I just, so I would really encourage the relationship building. That's really what makes this different, is when you can connect with a banker who wants to do, or a group of bankers who want to really do this, what they can bring to the table on top of the curriculum is so much more. You know, Rebecca can speak to kind of how our program has gone with them recently. We typically spend a lot more time on conversation than we do looking at the slides.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much, Michael, for joining us. Does anyone have any other questions for him?
I was just going to ask, so for this, is do you do all of the modules or do you like pick and choose? I know, Rebecca, you're working on it. So I'm just trying to think. So I work with seniors. So, you know, would there be, is there, do you have to strictly, you know, follow the whole?
No, to answer your question, no, you do not. And I will tell you, there's also a program for older, for seniors. So if you really, you should dig through this and take a look. And I would say to you that on any of the programs, I've rarely offered all of the modules. Typically what I'll do with the people like Rebecca, who I'm working with, is we'll have a conversation about the 15 to 16 modules that are involved. We'll pick out four or five of them that make the most sense for the group. And those are the ones that we'll focus on.
A couple of quick questions. One is, did you say something about City also offering some kind of program?
I know that back when I started doing this, I actually went up to Hartford to a meeting with the FDIC. They actually came in and met with a number of participating banks. And there was a lot of different banks there. Most of them were smaller like me. But I do remember meeting a young woman from Citibank who had, they had a whole department actually that they ran this. So I would say that I'm going to guess your experiences are the bigger banks probably have departments that are in charge of this. The smaller banks will have local people that are involved. That's why my suggestion is, if you've got a personal relationship at all with anybody who's in a bank, that would be my first contact, is to say, you know what, I went to a presentation, I saw this discussion about financial literacy with a banker, they use the FDIC program. Do you guys do this? I'd like to do this locally. I'm trying to find a bank that's involved. That would be the way I'd start the conversation, because most bankers that you already have a relationship, wherever you go to do your banking or cash your checks, are probably aware whether they have a program or not and who in their organization handles it.
And a lot of times these banks will give you money for your programs.
Yeah.
As well. That's yeah. The best part about it all. Once you connect, they, most of them have, you know, foundations.
Yep.
I have another question. Just if you have a very diverse group of clients, in my case, I have everybody from people who live on SSI for $780 a month to people who are overcommitted, have 10 kids, but make $100,000 a year. Would you suggest dividing them up into interest groups if you were going to have financial assistance? I mean, financial education?
Probably. And I'm not going to give you a definite on that, because I have seen real benefit both ways, right? So what you have to be careful of is, especially if you have an interactive presentation where you allow people to question, you might find if you put those two groups together, you might find that there is some intimidation for the folks who are less financially successful to step up, knowing that there's other folks in the group that, and vice versa, those people who are used to, you know, they make decent money and they're used to chasing after what they want, they tend to monopolize. So there is some benefit to putting like groups together. I will also say that depending on the presenter, there can be some value to connecting those people and having them kind of get a feel for each other, you know, and I think that's something that you have to really work with your presenter on. I've been doing this long enough so that generally when I get into those situations, when there's a diverse group, I'm able to control it. If you had somebody who was kind of new to presenting, it might be a struggle for them.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Michael. We really appreciate your expertise and your wisdom. I feel very fortunate because I've gotten to see you so many weeks in a row. So we'll have to plan something else together.
All right. Happy to do it. Thanks, everybody, for having me.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye, Michael. Bye-bye. Okay.
So, Rebecca.
So now it's just us. Yeah.
Yeah, Rebecca, did I miss? I had some computer issues. Did we hear exactly what you're doing with the clients, like how it works and who got, how you selected them, or did I miss that part?
Not how you selected them. Sorry, Rebecca, go ahead. She's frozen.
Through our program, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I'm frozen. Okay. It came out of client interviews. There were clients that just are food insecure and needed food, and other clients who needed, you know, help with insurance or benefits. And the clients who referred to this program specifically were dealing with financial insecurity. And one of the things that came out of it is that they wanted support with financial education. It's a question we asked in our intake process.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question for the intake process.
And then do your social workers attend at all, or is it just you send the clients and they go to these presentations?
Rebecca?
Yes.
Rebecca, yes, did
so
you hear that?
And then we sent sorry, it's a little delayed, but yes, we send the client. No, you can't hear me?
We can hear you.
I'm sorry.
You can.
My clients, then I've done these, they're monthly Zooms.
Uh-huh. And are they just your clients?
And then we have one-on-one financial coaching.
Okay. And you do that, the social workers do that, or are they with the coaching? Got it.
We do it. We do the invitation.
Okay. So Shelley from Winnipeg, sorry. The information is on the FDIC, or are you talking to, she's talking to Susan.
Talking to me.
Okay, Susan.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I privately messaged her, sorry.
I see.
Well, but if I may, that's because I sent to everybody some information about the program we have in Montreal, and I can't stop shepping Nafis over it. It's been a few years. It's incredibly successful. It's a hardcore budgeting program, which actually he's right. That information is available in many sources, but we developed our own with a cash flow so people can manage their money. But it's the social workers who run it after some hesitation and maybe some resistance and have really incorporated the financial capacity building into their clinical work. And
Could it's you amazing. Maybe present to us like how you did the intake, just a program presentation on how you train the social workers, how you enrolled the clients, what it looks like? I think it would be really helpful because I know
it would be my pleasure. I would ask my colleague who runs the program, who developed it, for, yeah, she'd love to. I mean, she, and she'll get really granular if you want.
Yes.
You know, she'll go into, okay, it would be our pleasure.
I think so,
so
right?
We can work on it.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Absolutely.
Is this another pop-up?
Yeah. Well, no, it can be our next meeting.
It could be our next
meeting. What were you going to say? Or we can do a pop-up, either or. Lauren, you were going to say something.
I was going to say, my fiance was actually, he's involved. He works for a credit union. And they, and he now is doing this cash program and volunteering, but helping people with budgets. And I'm like, why aren't we connected? You know, they just get random referrals, but they actually are using the financial social work. They have a budget and program, which I was like, what? You're not a social worker and you're using this. But I'm wondering too, just that was, I saw that last night. I don't know if anyone has had any experience with the financial social work with any of that. There's, I know that there've been like online courses and stuff like that, but I didn't know if anyone has used that for budgeting or for helping their clients.
Patricia from St. Louis says she has.
What is it, Patricia?
Yeah, I'm mute.
I wish I could say it'd be more helpful, but I did get some handy charts out of it. Got my FSW certification. I'd like to move on from there, but I just there was some good stuff in it and I should probably review it some more, but I did get the certification.
Very interesting.
It's handy just for things like we have, you know, expense sheets and income sheets we go over with clients, and I didn't know, like, how do you judge how much should you be spending on utilities and how much should be going into rent or mortgage? And we have just those basic numbers now to work with. So
very interesting.
Was that free or did you have to pay for those?
I paid for it. Actually, my agency did, so I was really happy about that. But, you know, it was 20 CEUs. I needed it anyway. It was good, but I'd like to build on that.
That's interesting.
Sounds like Susan's program would be some of that in a, because part of it is knowing it and part of it is how to launch it and train people and enroll clients in it, you know, in a more kind of systematic way, because I have a lot of social workers asking for training on financial literacy, but then some social workers that, you know, I supervise seem to just get that instinctively more and they're working more separately, but so that we can have an overall training and forms and way to work with people on,
you know,
that.
I think one of the, perhaps the crux of our system that sounds different than what Patricia is talking about is, I mean, we do know what things should cost, but that's not material to what we're doing. The first many sessions is for people to record what they're actually spending. That's the biggest shock for people. They have no idea. And I often say, I think all of us can relate. I really don't know what I spend, but I seem to spend it all. And for people who are coming to us, they spend it all plus. So the first thing is they determine what they're spending. And then when they see that in black and white, and this is the clinical part that's so good, because we always have to deal with all the adults in the household, they have to figure out then what their priorities are, right? We're not telling them you shouldn't pay more than 25% of your income for rent, or an average rent should be $1,500 or whatever it is in your community. May be very important for them to live in an expensive rent. So this, you have $3,000. If you decide that 50% of your income is rent, what are you doing? How are you either going to raise your income, or what are you going to give up? And those are the discussions with the often adult children in the household who may know nothing about what's going on, mm-hmm. and the adult parents or partners in the household who also don't really know what's going on. And then as we move through it, we look at kind of options, whether or not they need to keep their house, sell their house, look at a bankruptcy, look at increasing their income. As Michael said, it's pretty, budgeting is not that complex. It's what you do with it.
You know, Money Matters was accepted last year to our conference. And or was the conference
right
before? And then, because it was so interesting, it was a great idea. I remember when I was reading this, but then I think that Gail said that OMES wasn't coming.
It was accepted in the showcase.
Oh, just this, well,
and,
listen.
And we didn't feel we could do it justice in the showcase. That's what happened.
Oh, that's
but if
what
you
happened.
Give us,
but this is,
you give
I think
us,
it would
45
be great.
Minutes.
I think it'd be great if you could present it here. And if it's something that people really think is wonderful, maybe we can do a training series. I mean, if it's, you know, if you can't learn it in 45 minutes or whatever this is, maybe we should think about, I thought I lost you. Maybe we should think about doing a more in-depth something, but we should hear about it. I'm sorry, Jen, what?
I just chatted also, is it Janice or Janice? I can't remember.
Sorry, it's Janice.
Janice. And we had also talked about Cleveland presenting. They have a whole financial program as well. So I think if we could either, depending on how long Susan and Janice thought their presentations would be, we could either do as two separate, because I think, you know, the best thing that I've seen when learning, you know, bringing us all together is sometimes we can adopt what people are doing or just take parts of it, but going more in depth into how people are doing things is really helpful, not just sort of the basics, but how they do the whole process, because, you know, like budgeting,
how they train their staff, all of that. So
as we're speaking, I'm writing to my colleague. I think she has a presentation kind of ready, but I'm asking her how long it takes to do it.
Well, do we want to do it maybe 2 weeks in a row? Do we want to do it, you know, January and February? Like, how do we want to do it? Janice, we've already just said you're doing it with us, so thank you.
Yes, you're welcome.
Would you be interested?
I chatted with her personally. Yeah. I did ask her.
I'd be very interested in doing it. It might make the most sense, though, to do it like in a back-to-back, like the two-week separation, mainly because then whoever goes second, like if I go second, I can listen to what was in Money Matters and I can incorporate it into, you know, what I'm doing. Like, these are the things that are different, just so that we're not regurgitating the same thing for people.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe we could have you'd have the format then, because the format would be, you know, intake and actual the work and then training for staff and, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny because this Headway program that we're doing tomorrow is Thursday, is going to be very different than the initial one, because, you know, I felt that they really needed to understand what JFS agencies did. And that's why they're going to be going over the intakes in, you know, a lot of depth, which I think will be very interesting to see what you ask, what, you know, what they ask, because I think what Rebecca said, I had never thought to ask on an application, you know, what is your financial literacy? You know, I think that's would you be interested in learning more about it? Like, there are a lot of different things you can learn from each other. So
Lisa, is it still possible? I wanted to do Headways, but I wasn't able to attend the first, and as it turns out, the second. Are they being recorded?
Yeah, I'll get in touch with you after this.
Okay,
and we can
great.
Talk about that. So I don't think we have another, do we have another one scheduled for emergency financials? We have one in December.
I don't know.
I will look. Or do we want to do this as a pop-up or something?
I think
we can stick with schedule. 12/8. We have one scheduled for 12/8. Maybe we can do it the next week, 12/15. Does that work for anyone, for you, our presenters at least?
I don't know. I personally would hate to present December 15th because I'm in a holiday mode by December 15th.
Yeah.
But I will get back to you, because if she has it ready to go and she's ready to do it, that's fine. If she has to work on and present it, then.
Okay. I'll be in touch. We won't talk about it here. I'll be in touch with Susan, Janice, Jen. And
okay, great.
But that sounds terrific. What a wonderful idea. Anyone else have anything they want to talk about in terms of this kind of financial literacy or what we're talking about here? Those people that we haven't heard from?
Lisa, I'm interested to hear if other people, like a while ago when this was first launching during COVID, a number of people said that they were not getting the avalanche of requests, financial assistance requests, that they had expected. We have also not gotten the avalanche of financial assistance requests that we had thought. And I'm just curious if other people have seen a pickup, because we have not.
Our calls have gone down a little bit, which was interesting. Like, our overall calls went soaring up, and then our calls now are back to last year's levels, just initial calls. And financial is higher than it was last year, but it's not the avalanche we thought, but we're still in an eviction moratorium situation.
Yeah.
LA County, it's, you have to pay right now 25% of your rent. Starting February 1st, you have to go back to paying full rent and all past due rent. So through October 1st, you did not have to pay. You didn't, if you didn't pay rent and you followed the proper procedures for declarations, you could not be evicted. So what's going to happen in February is everyone owes their full rent, but all of the past due rent becomes becomes credit, becomes a, it's not for eviction. It's only considered a past due debt. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of financial issues in terms of now the landlords are going to be allowed to go to small claims court starting in February, but they will not be able to be evicted if they paid, filed the proper paperwork, paid 25% of their rent for 4 months, but everyone's going to owe full rent in February. So I'm really concerned what that's going to mean for homelessness and housing and rent requests.
Yeah, I don't know that Montreal, I don't know how we work vis-a-vis the states, but we had a similar situation where there was a moratorium on evictions up until I believe it was August. And I was anticipating that a lot of people were going to see a lot of evictions in August, and we didn't.
We did.
I don't even think I saw one. That
I
may
understand
be,
how that there, can be.
Well, there's
Everyone's
a few reasons.
Lost their jobs. What? I just don't get it.
Well, there's a few reasons I keep on answering myself. Why are our numbers down? Why are our emergency requests minimal? I mean, we have in Montreal what has been laid out. I mean, they raised $10 million around COVID relief.
Yeah.
And the intention was to give out a lot of money to lower middle income Jewish families to help. So on the first day we got, and we had no idea what was coming. The first day we got 35 requests. The second day we got 35 requests. And now we have less than 5 a week. So, you know, a bulk of people came in at the beginning and then it really diminished. I think there's a few reasons, I can speak for my community, that the Jewish community is not well represented in the economic areas that were most affected. You know, we're not in hospitality and we're not so much in retail, and there are a lot of areas where we're not. I say this among colleagues, I think in some communities we dodged a bullet by virtue of where we are. The poorest, the most vulnerable, were not particularly affected, because if they were on welfare, which is a significant proportion or whatever you call it, SSI, SSRI, they weren't really affected because they were poor before and they were poor after. Mm-hmm. Lower middle income people were able to access government relief in both countries that for many people here, it was $2,000 a month per adult in the household. Mm-hmm. So for a number of families, they were doing better than they were doing before. And students got big chunks of money because they couldn't work over the summer. So it kind of played out. The people who were probably affected were higher income earners, and they had other resources to stave them over. That's my analysis. Don't have a lot of facts, but it makes sense to me.
Interesting.
So... Okay, sorry.
Sherry, where are you calling? Where are you from?
It's Florida, so from Ruth and Norman Rails Jewish Family Services. So I'm happy to finally be able to join on a regular basis.
That's okay.
Yeah, so I think to what Susan was just saying, I think every community, like we service Boca, Delray, Highland Beach, we're very narrow because we have other JFSs that do other counties and other areas. But we also service all people. They don't have to be just Jewish. So I think that helps. We have already spent close to $300,000 just on COVID relief funds. We get a ridiculous amount of phone calls every day. Cost of living here has skyrocketed. So I am in the Boca Raton area. And I will tell you that our governor opened us up 100% pre-COVID. So evictions are on the table, your electric can be shut off, everything is as if nothing has happened. And while some of our families, like, you know, we're huge hospitality, you know, It's Florida. So we got a lot of people affected in multiple different ways. But yes, we're seeing now especially an increase because the rent they didn't pay or they didn't keep up with or pay at least what they could afford to pay is now all due. Yeah. So I'm getting requests like I pay my $4,000 that's due now. And our average rent for a one bedroom apartment here is about $1,800 if you want to live in a slum. And, you know, for a family, you're looking at least $2,500. And, you know, it's very difficult. So we are managing because like what Susan said, the community raised $10 million. Our community also is raising our funds to help us be able to pay because obviously we don't have all that kind of a cash flow. We're lucky to have a good amount of financial assistance for our department, but that's additional money that I can take to.
How big is your team to be processing so much money? How many people on staff?
I have two people. So I oversee financial assistance and food programs and things like that. I have one dedicated senior case manager that does that. And then I have two staff that can assist and myself if necessary. But that's her only thing that she does all day long, answering the phones. We probably get on average 35 to 40 phone calls daily, just on random, hi, I'm here to, you know, please pay something for me or what have you. We would love to be able to have more hands. But the best part about what I do is that the staff that I have, we work so well together. We've been together a long time. We work and we cross over, so we help each other. Otherwise, it would be impossible to do that. So we really all do chip in, and we manage. And it's, you know, because it's, we haven't experienced this level of phone call before. I mean, even before that, I could say, you know, yes, on a regular non-COVID year, we'll distribute close to $400,000 in financial assistance. But that's over a year. You know, this is daily. So we have multiple.
$400,000 for a small team like that is still enormous. And you have who issues the checks? Like your finance department?
Oh, we have a full accounting. We're very
and
large.
And do you pay to the vendor or do you pay?
Mm-hmm.
That is, the and then you have three staff, it sounds like, doing all of this, processing and meeting clients and.
No, one staff person that does all that. One staff, and when we're overloaded, I've got two backup that come and fit and help, and I do the same thing. But we've been operating like this for 7 years.
Wow.
I don't think you'll have time to present, but I'd be interested to hear a presentation on how you do that. But I don't know that you'll...
Happy to tell you. We ask for a lot of information that... Our board raises, listen, we raise all of our money, most of our money through the community. And our board is very much a stickler for making sure that we are, you know, really, you know, reaching every guideline and doing our due diligence to vet the individuals that come in. And, you know, we ask
for... I always have 10,000 questions, but if I'm calling your agency for financial assistance, do I have to live in a certain zip code, have any sort of problem in particular?
You have to live in our service area because, again, you have to remember, I'm in the southern part of Palm Beach County. So if you're in Broward, you're going to use our Broward Jewish Family Services. And then if you live a little further north of me, you're going to use West Palm Beach. So I'm servicing three major cities in my area that are covered.
Anita, anything else? I don't have to be Jewish. Do I have to be a certain age? Do I have to have any particular issue?
I have to vet that you are unable to pay your situation is because of something that occurred. You're a one-time financial assistance based on that. So if you call me to say, I couldn't pay my rents because I had an unexpected, bill for XYZ. I have to be able to see that. I've had cases where I'm sure we've all had cases. They take their kids to Disney and then they're calling me for, you know, a rent payment. No, sorry, you got to pay your bills first kind of a thing. So if we can prove that it's a legitimate ask and there really wasn't a misappropriation of use of funds they were responsible, then yes, we'll help them. But up to a certain amount, remember, we have...
So Sherry, this is what I would like to suggest potentially. Can you send that information, like your intake or your guidelines, to us? Because I think that's what Jen is always wanting to understand from other agencies. Like, what are people's guidelines? How do you decide who gets what and how much do you give? And what's your intake? So that would be really interesting. And if we did that, we could even put it into, you know, Boca Raton or Ruth Rails intake. Like, we could name it.
Yeah, that would be great. Because I would love just,
you know, JFS intake, because there are 100 JFSs, right? So we just
It would be interesting to see others as well. We've tweaked others as we've gone along over the years. And
terrific.
I think
thanks for great.
Yeah, I think it would be great, because
so if everyone here can do that, that would be great. And when you send it to me, write JFS St. Louis intake. You know what I mean? Like, write what it is, so I don't have to change it. But Susan,
I think we can keep profiling. I'm sorry, but I think we can keep profiling different JFSs and the paperwork at the same time. Because I'm not going to necessarily look through the paperwork without someone walking me through it. Because, you know, I think part of the value is like hearing that. So we can keep a thing, but if people are willing, you know, we can rotate people presenting. You know, how big is your agency? How do you manage the inflow? What does it look like? How is your staff trained? You know,
that
because here
today we got now we have three. Who else wants to do it?
I'm new to do it, and also I really liked that idea of you know, doing individual presentations. And my camera is messing up. I was nodding along, and then I was like, no one can see me. But our paperwork in Hamilton, Ontario, we're actually very, very. I think we only have 4 pages. We're very short. We're very to the point. And I would really love to see what some of you guys are doing to kind of, I don't want to say weed out, because that's kind of a loaded viewpoint, but we have about 30, I mean, we're a small agency, and I have 38 on my caseload right now, but we try to kind of help people get off it so we can then help more people, you know, transition through. And we do have a couple, like I'm having this one client I'm struggling with right now, to be frank, who she's working. She doesn't really need us anymore, but my gosh, like the amount of trouble she's been to try and get her. We don't just want to ever cut anybody off, but it's transitioning her off that and how best to do it. So yeah, I'd love to see what you guys, how you guys process and what your forms are like, especially if they maybe are a little more thorough than ours are.
Well, I think that you got to say no, but that's, you know, no, that's hard to do. And I'm sure it's a lot more complicated, but I think people can send in their forms, and we can do what Jen has suggested, which is have people present and they can share their forms as well. Because I think like Amy, she wants to see it now if we don't start until, you know, 12/8. So, you know, Amy, does everyone know how to get into the resource library? I can send everyone the reminder and just keep it somewhere, flag it so you always know how. And if everyone here remembers to send in their intakes, we can do that. And I think that would be great for this group, actually. And I love the idea of presenting. Yes, sorry.
I think if I could just add one last thing, I think it's really important when we do send in our like information is, we're only a one-time touch. We're not ongoing assistance. So I think it's important to kind of give a little bit of a synopsis of like what, you know, for me, if somebody comes to me this year and I've paid my max, which for us is $1,500 per client, they can't come back until next year. Like, you know, it's like once a year, if you know what I mean, we're always going to have the seniors that come back. We're always going to take care of our seniors. If it's a habitual person that comes back with the same issue, then I may send them out to a partner and say, you know, now tap into this resource because we partner with so many people. But it's good to know, because it sounds like what Amy's saying is that she's doing ongoing assistance with this client, which is really interesting, which I would love to be able to do at my agency, which we're never going to do. But we do the best we can with other resources as well, and cooking, connecting them. That would be helpful to know.
I know we have a program that many people are jealous of, but be careful what you ask for. We distribute about $1.8 million a year to our community, to the low-income members of our community, in food vouchers and paying vendors. And it's an ongoing program. But like Money Matters is just you don't get to that program until you do Money Matters, right? And then Money Matters would indicate where we can work with you and where you could, where we can be helpful. But it's really integrated into our social service work and our employment work and everything else. So that we might help somebody only one or two times, or we might pay for a course, or, you know, whatever it is, but it always has to be in a context of a plan, and there's ongoing work. Just be, you know, the money is a tool. It's not a program.
Right. Well, we're going to listen. You're going to go next. We're going to have you present next.
Okay. I'm just saying Money Matters is only one aspect of a much larger, well-structured, 100-year-old community assistance program. Right. And Jennifer, I'd be glad to send you our community assistance program booklet, which is, you know, 20 pages long.
Oh, I'd like that too.
Who doesn't want that?
Well, we'll post it.
We'll post it. Yeah. Send it to me. Yes. That'd be terrific.
I just quoted money as a tool, not a program. I just wrote that down.
I say that all the time because they think, you know, people come and they think we're a Jewish community bank. We are not.
Yes. Right.
We are not a bank. That's what you
are. Not so true.
That is so true. Susan, when everyone's going to court, money is a tool, not a program.
Yeah, it can be pretty overwhelming when you're on the front line. So I think also maybe when you present, Susan, you can also give us the scope of what all the things are that your agency does.
I'll do the intro and then I'll hand it over. She's answering me. She said, by the way, sure, I would do it. She already wants to have a client come on and talk about how they did her cash flow. She's very excited on my other screen.
How fabulous. Okay, so this was really a very exciting, engaging.
We all want Rebecca's banker. We all want your banker, Rebecca.
He's great, Michael, and I'm really excited about this pop-up. We're going to do it the next meeting, but I can't wait, personally.
I'm going to email all of you guys, and we'll figure out the time if we're going to do a pop-up, all that. But thank you for coming, right? I don't know if you guys want to end it. I wanted to talk to you, Jen and Rebecca, after this. If we've got like 2 minutes, that'd be great. So... you want to say anything? Thank you all for coming.
Thank you so much. So nice to see everybody. Learn from everybody.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Stay safe.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Thank you so much for being here. Great stuff.
Bye.
So I just wanted to talk, and I'm going to email you, Patricia, don't worry. I just wanted to talk to you guys about how we should do this. Do you want to do a pop-up? Do we want to do it on 12/8 and then just in January? I mean, something like that.
Yeah, I think...